TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and scorenorth.com.
Yeah, it's a Mackie and Judd production, but it's actually Conduits of Trouble Times. Olga and Star Tribune sports columnist Chip Scoggins in San Antonio for the women's Final Four, correct, Chipper?
I am here. I got down, what is today, Friday? I came down Wednesday.
It is Friday.
Came down Wednesday and did a big profile piece on Paige Beckers here from UConn, former Hopkins star. And so we got the semifinals tonight at the Alamo Dome.
Very nice. Hey, on Paige, because, you know, certainly during the course of her time playing at Hopkins High School, we all knew she was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Is she better than we thought, though?
Well, I think we all knew she was unique. But even Gino Auriemma, I mean, you know, Hall of Fame coach, he's coached some of the greatest players in women's basketball history.
Yep.
He said that when he, before the season, before the players came on campus, he was thinking about how he's going to handle Paige. I mean, she's the number one recruit in the country. But he thought about previous players, Maya, Diana Taurasi, Brianna Stewart. I mean, you know, they were national players of the year, too. And, like, even he said, Diana Taurasi, who's one of the greatest, you know, probably the five best players of all time, I would guess, didn't start as a freshman. And a lot of, even, he doesn't start freshman typically.
Yep.
So she, at the end of the year, she was, but she came up the bench. She said, well, you know, maybe that wouldn't be the worst thing for Paige, just to kind of diffuse some of the pressure on her. You know, there's all these expectations. And then they start practicing about a week into it. He's like, okay, yeah, she starts. He said, she's our best player. And so he was surprised at how just good she was. And I asked him after they won the Elite Eight the other night, I got on the Zoom and I asked Gino, who, by the way, which I found out was college roommates with Joe Sensor at like Westchester, Pennsylvania.
No way. 12.
Yeah. Yeah. He was Joe Sensor's college roommate.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. And so, but I asked him, I said, you know, when you recruited Paige, obviously you spent a lot of time with her and you got to see her play a lot, but having been around her, you know, every day of every practice, you know, are the things that you learned about her that you maybe didn't know in recruiting her. And he said, she just does some things that are unreal. Like that, you know, just the presence and the instinct she has.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think everybody, you know, she's great, right? When you watch her in high school, you know, she's great. But I think just that she was able to find another gear and even play, you know, at a higher level for mm-hmm. the best program in college basketball, I think that's kind of taken everybody a little bit by surprise.
Yeah. It's how quickly, right? Like you knew that she was going to be great, but I mean, as a freshman, there's a lot of people who don't step in and do this immediately.
Well, no, I mean, I think everybody, you know, you knew she'd, well, I can't say I knew she'd star, but it, I mean, Judd, that's the thing about their team is they have seven freshmen, no seniors. This is all freshman team. I mean, they have some juniors that contribute, obviously, but it's basically freshmen. But I mean, think about this, Judd. She is the first freshman in the history of the women's game to be the National Player of the Year. So this does not happen ever.
Right.
And so, yes, I mean, to say anybody predicted this, I think they would be lying.
Yeah, I mean, because it's incredible. Now, here's my question for you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, Chipper, let's do some long-term planning here. If you are a certain WNBA franchise that is based in the Twin Cities, okay?
Yes.
And this kid is a freshman, and I believe women have to play, ordinarily they play 3 years, is that correct?
Yeah, it's weird, and I looked at this rule 100 times and even checked it with people. Mike Rand and Kent Youngblood helped me out with it, that you have to be 22. You have to turn 22 in the calendar year of the draft.
Okay.
So because she does, she'll be 22 that October. I believe it's 2023.
Mm-hmm.
She will be 22. Kind of like Amanda Zowie was in the same situation.
Amanda Zowie B. Yes.
Zowie B. So I think we think that Paige can come out for the draft after her junior year. Most of them stayed through their 4 years, but we believe because of the way her birthday falls that she's going to be able to come out after her junior year. So two more seasons.
Okay. Cause I was just going to play this out a bit and say, if I was a certain WNBA team in this town, I don't know, and I'm usually really good. I don't know how I would arrange this, but it seems pretty damn imperative that this kid, who I'm sure will be the top pick in her draft, it seems fairly imperative that I get her on my team, because there's no question she would sell tickets here.
Oh, God.
No question.
She's going to sell tickets wherever. And that was part of my story today, Judd. So between – she's kind of this phenomenon in the sense that obviously very skilled and does things that, you know, few players can do on the court. But she grew up in the digital age, right? And she is a social media giant. I mean, between
– this is so interesting.
Yep. Between Instagram, Twitter – and TikTok, which, you know, I understand Twitter. I don't really understand TikTok and Instagram, but she has 1 million followers, Jen. Wow. On Instagram, she has almost 750,000 followers, including Drake the rapper, professional athletes. So she has this social media presence. And I actually talked to there's a company called Open Doors, and they help athletes monetize their social media brand. They work with the NFL, NBA, PA, a lot of colleges. And so it's foreign to me because I'm an old guy like you.
Yeah.
But I talked to the CEO and he said that, you know, these athletes that have a huge social media following, if Paige just did one tweet, like he used Wilson basketballs, for example.
Uh-huh.
If she just did one tweet and one Instagram post, you know, I use Wilson basketballs, they're the best or whatever.
Yep.
That she should expect to earn $23,000 for that. Huh. When the name, image, and likeness legislation finally comes, and it, you know, I'm like, what? You know, but I guess these people, these influencers or whatever you call them, they just know that there's a formula that social media is just a huge money making opportunity for people. So that's kind of a long winded thing of saying, yes, I would tank.
That's what I'm asking you. Like, how do you tank?
I would tank hard. And you're, you know, if it is that she can come out after junior, 2 years from now, you're going to see a lot of NBA or WNBA teams really trying to tank to get her because she's a transformational player on the court and I would assume at the box office because she would be a big draw for kids. John, I had heard this, so I wanted to see it for myself about Paige's popularity last year. And so, because I know her, you know, the former Hopkins coach, Brian Krause, really well, and he was telling me about this. And so I went and saw it. It was Valentine's night. Hopkins was playing at Wayzata. And I had heard when they play on the road, it's unbelievable the reception and what happens after the game. So I go, and literally, I'm talking 5 seconds after the end of that game, kids just run on the court, like from everywhere, and they just surround Paige. And start taking pictures, and you know the rest of the team is going to the locker room, and she's out there, and finally have to get like a security to help her get to the locker room, and then the whole mass just moves right outside the locker room, and there must have been, I would say, 100 people there between kids and parents, and she stays, she would stay after, and it pretty much was on road games.
Yep.
But there was it looked like there was a girl there. She's probably like 8 years old. And then she was with their mom and dad. So I introduced them and told them I was, you know, doing a story. And they're like, oh, yeah, we live in Burnsville. We normally go out on Valentine's Day as a couple, but our daughter said she had to see Paige. So we came from Burnsville to Wayzata, you know, have no connection, just right, to watch her play. And it happened. That happens all the time. And she would stay and she would do TikTok videos with girls, pictures, selfies, sign autographs. And there's young boys there, too. And she stayed until everybody got a moment with her. And it happens every game. And so it got to the point where she wouldn't even ride with the team bus because they would be long gone. She drove separately. Judd, her and her dad would drive, or, you know, a friend or drive herself. She would drive separately to road games because she would stay after for 30 minutes, an hour, doing TikTok videos with little kids or signing autographs or doing selfies.
That's awesome.
It's unbelievable. I mean,
that is so cool.
It was like a rock star. It's like, holy cow, this is.
Wow.
And the thing that's cool about that, I just really am impressed with her. And talking to her mom and dad because, I mean, God, she was 17, 18, 19, you know, right. She's 19 years old.
Like, right, your kid.
Imagine when me and you are 19, you know.
I wasn't doing that.
I would not be able to handle that. And just having that spotlight and just But her mom said she's never complained. She loved it. And my interactions with her, she does. I mean, I talked to her afterwards and she's like, yeah, this is, and her mom had a great quote. She said, Paige understands that with great success comes great responsibility. And she just has taken this and just accepted it, embraced it, and had fun with it. And just a pretty mature, amazing young person to be able to deal with all of that in that spotlight.
That is an awesome story. I didn't know about that part. I mean, a couple coming with their kid from Burnsville on Valentine's Day night speaks volumes about the appeal of the player.
Well, and it happens in, you know, like the next game, Carl Anthony Towns and like 5 Timberwolves players went to watch her play. But the night I went to Wayzata, so I, you know, they burned it, and it happens that people came all over the metro. But I actually sat next to a guy from Woodbury. His kids go to Eastridge, and I know him. He brought his daughter, who I think was a 8th grader or freshman at the time. Mm-hmm. They had never seen her play live. They wanted to see her play live, so they came from Woodbury to Wayzata to watch. And Cosgrove was telling me that happens all the time. People would come all over the metro. They'd find. He said it was more when they were on the road than it was Hopkins games, but people would find where she's playing on the road and would go and just, you know, they'd read about her in the newspaper, maybe seen some of her videos or whatever, seen her on TV, and they just wanted to see her in person.
Wow.
So it's amazing.
It's a great story.
Yeah.
Did you happen to catch the highlights or hear about what happened in the, and yes, it's one of 162, the opening day meltdown, which really didn't start off well by the Twins in Milwaukee, Chip Scoggins, when Josh Donaldson pulls up lame with what they're calling a hamstring in the top of the first inning as the second batter after he smoked a ball to the gap in left center?
So I was in my hotel room all day yesterday because I was writing the Paige story live, and it was, you know, got up early and was writing all day. So I didn't have Twitter open. Obviously, wasn't watching on TV. I was just, you know, tunnel vision on my story. And I had to do a podcast with the Star Tribune podcast with Mike Rand. And so he calls me and he tells me about Donaldson, and I thought he was doing like an April Fool's joke. Because it was April. And I was like, what? Like, a half inning? That's, and what was it?
No second batter. Wasn't even a half inning.
John, I mean, what was the, every prediction about the Twins, like literally every prediction about the Twins hinged on what two things? The health of Donaldson and Buxton, right?
Yes, we talked about it.
Half inning. You can't make it up. So it was, and I haven't seen any reports or anything, but remember we talked about this, or did we talk about it where he, was it a Twins Fest or spring training where he's talking about he was changing the way he ran?
We talked about, yes. Yeah. I think it might've been when he got to spring training, but yes, he talked about how he had altered his running style. And we both said, we have seen this movie before and it usually doesn't have a successful ending.
So you wonder if this is tied to that.
Of course. Well, and look, they said hamstring post game. That's what they said.
Yeah.
But you know, as much as I like Derek and Thad and Rocco, I think they're good guys. I really do like them.
Yeah.
They have not been forthcoming when guys are hurt. So you can't convince me that this does not have something to do with the calf. And furthermore, I'll tell you this. Let's say they're telling the truth, okay? Let's say this has nothing to do with, he's a 35-year-old player with a hamstring problem now. It's not like that's a break. Oh, whew, it's only a hamstring. We've seen hamstrings hold guys out for a long time.
Well, and absolutely. And the, you know, concerning thing wasn't all the talk in spring training about how they're going to monitor and, you know, take all these precautions about days off they had a plan in place and all this, and it lasted one at bat.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, that's a lot of money that you have tied up in a player that's got some major leg injuries, you know, mm-hmm. I don't say major is like an ACL, but I mean,
but it's chronic, right?
Chronic,
which is a huge problem at 35.
Yeah. Were you on the Zooms? Did Rocco give any kind of, I mean, I'm assuming it's too early to say what kind of timetable, but when you're talking about hamstrings, I don't think you just run back out there the next day.
He said they're going to evaluate it today, and there'll probably be, so they're off today because of the break that you have after opening day, and then they're going to play tomorrow. So, but I mean, my guess is he won't play till May now. Like, this is the Twins have never been forthcoming about when guys, at least this current administration, when guys get hurt. And look, when we're talking about chronic problems in your legs, like there's no workaround there.
No.
You can't, and it's not like, oh, well, if he could only DH. No, he got hurt running. So I don't know what to do at this point.
Do they have injury protection on contracts for baseball? Like
yes. Yes, they've got insurance.
Because I'm thinking, I don't want to be overly dramatic, but based on what we saw last year, and he's hurt, one inning into this year. The chronic nature of this is what's alarming, and I don't know how he gets around it. How do you?
I don't know. No, that's what I'm agreeing with you completely. You don't. Like, there's no workaround here.
So let's assume he misses. Okay, probably best case, what, a couple weeks. Do you lose Sano back there or Arise?
Arise is the super utility guy now, and he was slated to start in left field yesterday, and they immediately just moved him to third and put Jake Cave in left field. If this is going to be a while, I think what they might do is they probably will call Brent Rooker up off the taxi squad, so he's actually with them.
Yeah.
Promote him. Now, I looked this up, and he hasn't done it above double A, but Rooker played some first base as well. He's played 58 games in his minor league career at A and double A at first base. I wonder if you would have some type of Arise would play a lot of third, but you could move Sano back there at times because he did play third base in spring training again, which to me is an indication they were preparing for something. And then Rooker might be able to slot in at some first base. That was my guess.
Like, if you're going to do that with Sano, wouldn't you just rather him say, okay, you're playing third. We're not going to go back and forth like that. Because
yes, I agree.
Like, if they said, okay, Donaldson, he's done for 3 weeks. I would say, if you say, okay, we're going with Sano, I would say, all right, Miguel, you're playing third base 5 days a week, and not every other day or something. Because I just think that would be too difficult. You just open yourself to potential problems. So. Not good, Judd.
No. And the meltdown, Chip. Alex Colome.
Yeah.
And you, I don't know if you saw. Okay.
Take it back for it. I didn't see the play. I didn't see any highlights.
So he comes in with the Twins up at the time 5-2. Okay. He gets the first guy to fly out to right. He gets two strikes on Colton Wong. And then he hits him. So now there's a guy on first, but you're still up by three runs. So you're in good shape, okay?
One out.
One out, correct. So you're in really good shape. The next guy up hits a dribbler, and Colome, instead of taking the sure out, and Kristen Yelich is on deck. Instead of taking the sure out at first base, he goes for the double play and makes a terrible throw and pulls Polanco off the bag. So now, instead of two outs and man on second, you've got one out, and it's first and second. Yelich is up, which is a major. He then hits a screamer that looked like it was going off the bat, but it wasn't. In fact, Kepler probably should have caught it, but it was a tough play, so Kepler drops that ball. So now you've got one run in, two men on. The next guy hits a ball to Sano at first. He throws to Colome covering for the out. So now you've got two outs. You're in pretty good shape. And then Travis Shaw comes up and hits a double, and now it's tied.
Judd, why don't you take the sure out in that situation?
Nobody knows.
I mean, if Yelich hits a home run, you're still winning.
Correct.
And as I listen to that, what the hell are they doing spring training?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I mean, isn't that what spring training's for? To go over situations? I mean,
PFP, pitchers fielding practice. It's been around since baseball started.
Well, and that one just seems, even on first guess, I mean, that's just fundamental baseball. Get your out, you get two outs, and
I don't know.
I assume Rocco protected him, huh?
Rocco did say he has to, that our guy has to throw it to the right.
Is Rocco ever going to criticize anyone, any player, anything that happens?
Not like we want. No. I mean, the closest he gets is saying we need to throw to the right base. He took a shot at Rosario in Kansas City last year when he threw to the wrong base? Because I think that that drives Rocco, rightfully so, crazy.
Yeah.
But is Rocco ever going to really criticize a player like he probably could and should? Absolutely not.
And I understand it's opening day and it's a new player, so it's probably not the time and place to come in and turn over it. What'd you do? Frosco came in and turned over the buffet table.
But you're right, though, Chip. I mean, what did you do in spring training? You're right. Like,
well, that's the thing.
Go to the right base.
Were they just golfing, or what? Were they paying attention? And, you know, I mean, that just seems like that would be, if you're coming out of spring training and you actually were putting in work and doing the things that you talked about, how hard you're working to get your work in, you know, in game one, you throw to the wrong base. Or don't take the sure thing. I don't know. Well, that's a bad loss.
It's a terrible loss.
As Royce would say.
It's a bad loss. And here's the other thing. And you were saved from witnessing this part of it. That game took 4-14, Chip.
Yeah.
I know it's opening day. But I had points in that game where I'm like, I might not make this. The Brewers used 1, 2, 3. The Brewers used 5, including in the 10th with Josh Hader. The Twins used 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They used 6, including Dobnik, who then gave up what eventually was the winning hit.
You know what's funny, Judd?
4-14.
Opening day, we're just like, opening day is the greatest thing ever. I love opening day. One day later, it's like, this sport's dead. It's too long.
I know. But how about
games are too long?
But how about 4-14?
I know. That's absurd.
This is what we've been talking about. Like, how do you do this? How do you?
The thing is, they can put all these rules in, and okay, it speeds it up 5 minutes. Okay, it's 4 minutes, 4 hours, and 5 minutes. You know, it's still it's just the nature of the game.
Exactly right. You know what? The one thing, and I had forgotten this when we went to the 10th. Yesterday, and I said, thank God, I had forgotten that we are still putting the guy on second base to start the 10th.
I like it, Judge.
I love it. It creates, Chipper, it creates strategy. It creates a ton of strategy. The only backwards thing about baseball is in the same game that you've got this progressive rule that some like and some hate about putting the guy on second to start the 10th. You're also playing in a National League park, which means Nelson Cruz can't play.
I know.
Because pitchers. So, like, in one hand, you've got baseball from 1925, and on the other, you got, hey, modern baseball. Like, it can't even decide what it wants to be.
That's true. I forgot about that. Well, I would hope in the next, after their work stoppage, after a long projected strike that they're
We won't be having opening day next year. Don't worry about it.
That universal DH comes back. And it's funny, the putting a runner on second. At first I thought, this is kind of silly.
Yep.
You know, before I actually saw it last year, I was like, that's dumb. But then I saw it put into practice and how, do you bunt them over? Do you, whatever, the strategy each manager takes. I was like, this is kind of cool. You know, I kind of like it.
No, it's great. It's great.
So I assume this is going forward. I mean, it's.
Yeah, it'll stay.
Every CBA, it'll stay. But, if it does cut down on 16 inning games, I'm all for that.
That's what I was going to say. I can't tell you because when we got to the 10th in that game yesterday, my guess is that we were at, let's say 4:02, right?
Mm-hmm.
I said to myself, if they don't put a guy on second here, we're going to be here for 5:33. And it's the opener. I want to watch it. You know, it's important to watch it. So anyway, hey,
how did Maeda do?
He was nibbling way too much. He didn't really have his best control. Let's see here. He lasted 4 1/3, gave up 6 hits, 2 runs, 1 earned, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts, 88 pitches. He was definitely not as sharp as you ordinarily saw him last year. So, but I mean, it's one game. It's opening day. It's his first opening day. It's one game. On that one, I can't
He'll
work up
fine.
Any excitement.
Yeah. But it is funny. He was unhittable at spring training. First game out this, and then Max Kepler couldn't hit anything at spring training. He gets 3 hits his first game. So it's example number 1,000,000 that do not read into spring training results.
And our friend Patrick Royce told me, at least, he's like, Kepler looks awful. He really looks bad. I'm like, okay, it's Pat. I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
And to your point. 3 hits, and he came up, in the 9th and had a chance for the cycle. So besides that, it was a terrible day. Hey, Chipper, what's your confidence that the Vikings are going to do the right thing here, or even can, offensive line wise?
I would love to see the air quotes above, or air bubble above, Kirk Cousins' head when he sees all these defensive guys signing, and then they bring back Dakota Dozier.
Oh my God. Oh my. Yeah. Let's talk about that.
If they do not take a left guard or left tackle in round one, it might be storming the building. I mean, God. And I did watch Zimmer's Zoom, and he was, for him to admit that he was down in the dumps to that degree about his defense, he's walking on air now, right? I mean, I got what I want.
Hell yeah.
I'm good.
Yep.
They're going to have to throw that entire draft into the offensive line, right?
Chip, did you? Okay. I watched it too. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Did you come away from that confident? And I know what you think they should do, and I agree. So I'm not saying this to be objectionable to what you're saying. We're on the same page. But when you got done with that Zoom call with Mike, did you come away completely confident that they are going to take an offensive tackle in the first round?
No, because he I think he's asked about it. He said, well, we can take the best player available.
Yes.
Which, if there's a stud defense in there, you think Zimmer's not going to think, I got to have him. Imagine him opposite Hunter. I mean, no, I'm not confident they will, because I think, to me, it just shows the influence and power that Zimmer has in personnel, you know?
Yep.
He probably sat there for weeks after that season and said, I can't go through this. We have to fix this defense, and whatever it takes, that's what, our whole focus has to be. Because, it's literally everything. That's all we've done is defense.
Yep. They have not brought in an outside free agent on offense.
Well, and the other thing is, Judd, anytime he's asked about it, he's like, well, our offense is pretty good. We were 6-6. Yes. I was like, yeah, but you were had one of the worst offensive lines in terms of grading out pass protection, right? Where did all the his favorite website, Pro Football, had him, Focus had him again down towards the bottom right in pass protection?
Yes.
So how he could watch, yes, they put up a lot of points, and it was a good offense, but with the personnel that they have, mm-hmm. should be a great offense.
Yes. And the entire league now is really geared towards making your offense as good as possible.
Yeah.
That's what the league's about.
When you have Dalvin and Jefferson and Thielen, yep. and they're tight ends and a quarterback who's good, you shouldn't just say, well, we have a good offense. You say, we have a great offense that's high scoring. And so, because they were, 12th in scoring this year? I think,
11th.
Like that.
They 11th? Were 11th yeah. in scoring, and I think, and what? They were in yards, they were higher than that.
Yeah, but let's go by points. 11th, okay, that's a good offense. 11th is good.
Yep.
But it's not top 10, which, and, so I don't know. But it's funny. Anytime you ask about the offense, he's like, "Nah, we were good. We're really productive and put up."
He throws out names. He's like, "Yeah, we got O'Neal and we got Udo.
And we got
Cleveland." I came away from that call saying to myself that my beliefs have been confirmed, and that is he watched that Saints game on Christmas Day from the sideline and said, mm-hmm. "Never again." And I don't think, this sounds crazy to say about a guy that coaches a team, but I don't think he's concerned or even thinks about offense. I think he leaves that to other people while giving marching orders that are, we got to get more defense. And your point is 1,000% right. When you bring back and leave the temptation that Dakota Dozier could play, mm-hmm. what message are you sending?
Well, I still think Zimmer's, he ain't changing. Nope. What's his motto? Defense, special teams, time-consuming ball control. He thinks that is how you win. And he's just convinced, I think, that they would be a playoff team if their defense was any good last year. And so...
Yep. Because he thinks the offense is good enough. What he doesn't understand...
Good enough, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, but what he doesn't understand is the left side of that line... the interior of that line...
Yes.
...was a... For the most part, Cleveland stabilized it a little bit, but it was a disaster. And here's what I don't get about what's going on in what I would hope are the conversations between the GM and coach. if you put a guard like Dakota Dozier back at left guard, or if you play this Mason Cole guy that they got in the trade with the Cardinals at left guard, you are accelerating what already looks like a first-round bust in Garrett Bradbury.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like if you plugged in a really good guard to his left,
you'd feel better about it.
You'd feel better about it, exactly. And so I feel like Mike is, in Mike's world, he's concerned about defense. That's his one and only true love and focus in football. And he sees the Vikings' offensive components like a fantasy league owner would, which is, well, look, I got Dalvin, I got Justin Jefferson, I got Adam Thielen, I got Irv Smith. I think Cousins is pretty good. Unfortunately, in real life, there's something called an offensive line that I just don't think he thinks about. I really don't think he thinks about it very much.
Well, and the problem is, okay, we say, yeah, you better draft a left tackle first round and, you know, a guard. Well, that player's still going to be a rookie. Even though they're a first-round pick, so is Garrett Bradbury, right? It doesn't mean you're getting a all-pro player right at day one, you know? Ezra Cleveland. I mean, you don't know what you're getting with a draft pick. You would hope you hit it right, but even if you hit it right, doesn't mean that player is not going to have growing pains. And so, you know, that's where the not bringing back Reef or not getting a, you know, really trying to get someone, you know, a reliable veteran with the track record at left tackle just opens up, you know, a major issue along with the interior that you have to fix now. So I don't know. I don't know how they get it all done in a draft. Cause I mean, I know free agency is still going on, but I don't know who's out there. You know, I mean, I assume maybe a veteran will still get cut for money reasons somewhere, you know, either the summer before camp that you might be able to, but that's a roll of the dice. So
right.
I don't think it's going to be like, at the end of last year, I thought 100% offensive line would be the number one priority after, because on defense, you're getting guys back, right? Barr and Daniil and Kendricks and Pierce. But man, it's an afterthought again, Judd.
It definitely is. It definitely is. And I will say it again. Free agency started, is it 3 weeks ago now?
Mm-hmm.
They have not signed an outside offensive free agent yet. Like, that's not, it's not like, oh, they've sort of skimped. No, they just haven't done it. They brought back Abdullah, who's their third running back. They BB got brought back as well. They traded for this Mason Cole. But
and
I mean,
he's
a bad, but he's another Dozier. I mean, he's a depth
guy. Well, that's the thing. You look at the things, it's like he's a fringe starter, right? I mean, I mean, it's not like.
And he could play some center and guard, but he's certainly not a guy that you look at and say, that's part of the answer to your problems.
No, you don't say problem solved.
But Chip, I honestly think there's going to be right now draft wise, first round, there's going to be a run on quarterbacks, no question. There always is, and there will be this time. There's going to be a run on quarterbacks, and I think those receivers are going to go fairly quick because
it could be a run on receivers too, Judd. Yeah,
they fit today's game, and Chip, you know what that means at 14. That means
outside pass rushing in, baby.
Yep. That's exactly right. 100% right. And I think Mike's going to fight for it. I really do.
I can't wait for Twitter if that happens. I will. Vikings Twitter will just go berserk. At that point, if you're Spielman, don't you say, hey, I'm the GM. We are taking a left tackle here, or we're taking a left guard.
Do you think I don't know this at all, okay? Do you think that at some point in time, without us knowing, Mike took over control of the 53 man as far as who's on it and who's not?
I don't know if I would say take control of it, but I think he just has such sway in the decision making. I think I just think when he talks to Spielman about his vision and how he wants it to work, I think he's, for lack of better say, he gets his way, you know?
Yeah. He definitely gets his way.
I think he just gets his way. And so, I mean, cause I have to think Spielman's, he has to be thinking, I have to fix this offensive line, right? I got to address this. But if Zimmer's saying, you know, we can't, I can't have that defense again. And look how bad it is in our depth. And we got to get these, you know, because I thought they would be in the camp of, okay, getting Daniil back, getting Barr, getting Pierce, you know, the rookie corner. I did think that they need to go out and get a veteran corner, which, you know, getting Patrick Peterson was good. But I thought it would be more like they're solidifying that by guys that were already on the roster that are coming back, you know. But no, I mean,
no.
Yes, I don't know that he has, if he's, you know, I still think it's Spielman making the call, but I just think he has so much influence over how that Zimmer has so much influence over how that's going to be, how the roster is going to be constructed, that it's become, hey, this is what I want and this is what I'm getting.
Yeah. And he certainly has, but yeah, I've lost faith that the line is going to actually be fixed, because I think we've said for about 4 years now, oh, this will do it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't do it. And, and their problem now is if they don't get the right guards here, there's a fighting chance that we're going to get done with 2021 and consider Bradbury to be a bust. Cause I mean, he can run block, but you can't be as bad in pass protection as he is and make it long-term.
No, because that's where you look at, I don't know what the percentage of sacks were that came up the gut versus the outside, but it was probably 2-1 or 3-1, I would bet, you know, and just the pressure. I mean, how many times was it just like they were almost on top of Cousins as he was backpedaling and the line just got pushed backwards. So, yeah, you're right. You're 100% right. They need to find a guard that can really help Bradbury in those situations and, you know, make him look better. But
here's what confuses me too. So he didn't sign him, and he was not here yet when he got signed. But how do you, if you're Spielman, how do you watch as much of Steve Hutchinson at left guard as we all did?
Yeah.
And say to yourself, I can get by. Like Steve Hutchinson changed the dynamic of that line. Mm-hmm. And you know, Brad did a lot of things in game that were goofy and might not have been right. But like his idea when he got here from day one was, I got to build my lines up. And he was right about that. But I mean, they paid Hutch a ton to play left guard, which at that time, you know, was not considered really a sexy position. It still is not. But, you know, Rick Spielman was here for a long time watching Steve Hutchinson start game after game after game at left guard. How do you come away from that experience saying that Dakota Dozier will do? It's so confusing to me because like in us getting to watch Steve play so much.
Yeah.
I mean, it was damn impressive.
Yeah. And those lines were good. I mean,
yes.
I mean, I know McKinney drove us crazy a lot, but he was pretty good when he was motivated.
And you know who helped him? Steve Hutchinson to his right.
Exactly. And Lode Holt and John Sullivan. And I mean, I thought Anthony Herrera was a good guard. I mean, they had that line. I mean, Childers did understand that's where it started and you got to be good there. And you're right. Hutchinson just brought, you know, an edge, as I would say, to that group. And that's just what, you know, I go back to the way that Reef played last year. I would have tried to bring him back. I mean, it clearly wasn't going to come back at the money because he took probably a lesser offer, you know.
Right.
But that was that stems from the previous year and how he was, I don't want to say treated is the right word, but.
No, I think that's right.
Yeah.
They didn't treat him well.
Yeah.
I mean, they forced him to take a pay cut.
But now, I mean, I'll be curious to see what they do at left tackle, if it's Cleveland or Brian O'Neill. I assume it has to be one of those two, right? You're not going to put a rookie out there.
It depends. I mean, if they get the 14th pick and that whole, if Sewell fell to them, which I don't think he's going to, but if he did,
he'll be gone.
I would probably start him. But right now, if I was a betting man, I would say Brian O'Neill is your opening day left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
I would, and I would say Cleveland's going to stay at guard.
Yeah. Could you move him to right tackle?
Who's that, Cleveland?
Yeah.
You could, but I mean, who knows?
Yeah, he's learning a new position too, yeah.
These guys could try and put Rashad Hill back there for all we know. They just don't think of it like we do.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for them. And Kirk Cousins.
Kirk Cousins.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating, man.
All right, Chip Scoggins, I appreciate the time. Safe travels, and I'll talk to you next week, okay?
All right, brother. We'll see you.
Talk to you. Bye.